Our first case for argument is Mizo v. FERC. Mr. Flynn.
May it please the court. FERC has given you little to work with in support of this ruling, and what they've offered is insufficient. First, they adopted a new standard for abrogating the terms of private contracts that leaps well beyond the Supreme Court's very recent guidance on this specific issue. Under FERC standards, the Mobile Sierra presumption is denied to a contract provision that, quote, creates generally applicable requirements, quote, or that, quote, arose in a negotiation aimed at protecting
the
economy.
Tell me this. How does how does the right of first refusal help consumers of electricity?
Well, I'd submit, Your Honor, that that's not an issue in this
case. I asked you a question. You can answer it, or you can say you can't answer it, right?
FERC's view is that the right of first refusal permits additional parties to compete.
Additional what?
Additional parties to compete.
I'm sorry, I missed the word. What word after additional?
Parties.
Parties, yeah.
To compete to build new transmission. And so therefore, as a general matter, theoretically, the more parties that you would have willing to offer to build transmission, the lower you might be able to build it because you would get multiple offers. That's their...
Well, I don't understand. How does the right of first refusal increase the number of potential builders of transmission facilities?
Well, Your Honor, the right of first refusal, in this case, is a contractual provision that was entered into in 1998.
Yeah,
right,
so how does
question.
It help consumers? How does it help ratepayers?
To the extent that it facilitates the development of the Midwest ISO in the first place, it's
Why
a tremendous
does it facilitate? Benefit. I don't understand.
Well, the parties that formed the Midwest ISO did not have to join an ISO. It was a voluntary action. FERC could not compel it on the part of anyone. And so in 1998, it was quite a leap of faith for any transmission facility owner to make that jump, to give up control over its transmission lines to this third party in a region in which there was no pre-existing tight power pool as you had in PJM or as you had in New York and New England. There was no state law.
Well, let's
as you
talk about today. Or let me ask the question slightly differently. If the right of first refusal, you know, is abrogated, as FERC wants to do, does that hurt or help consumers of electricity?
Well, I don't think it's clear, and FERC did not establish a record on that.
I'm sorry, you're not. I wish you'd answer my questions.
Okay. Does the right of first refusal help or hurt consumers considered in a vacuum today? Is that the question?
Considered in a vacuum? What does that mean?
Without regard to the circumstances that gave rise to the contract provision.
Yes, of course. I'm talking about today.
Honestly, I don't know, Your Honor, whether it would or would not. The construction of...
Well, if right of first refusal is hurting consumers, wouldn't that justify FERC and... abrogating it?
Well, if FERC...
No, yes or no?
Not in this case, no.
Why?
Because this case concerns whether or not there's Mobile Sierra protection for the contracts at issue, and FERC never reached, in this case, the question of whether or not these provisions
harm the public interest.
No.
So the question is whether this is a reasonable... whether the right of first refusal is reasonable under present conditions. And that presumably is related to benefits or harms to consumers of electricity, wouldn't you say?
Well, I'd submit, Your Honor, that the issue is not whether, in the abstract, the right of first refusal...
What do you mean by in the abstract?
The context here is we have a contract...
I'm asking you a simple question.
Yes, Your Honor.
If the right of first refusal has outlived any benefit it might have had for consumers and is now harmful to consumers, why can't FERC abrogate it?
The short answer is because it's in a contract.
And could I ask you, counsel, you obviously don't want to talk about consumer welfare. You prefer to talk about the Mobile Sierra Doctrine, okay? So let's go with the Mobile Sierra Doctrine for a moment. Can we agree that Appendix B does not expressly invoke the Mobile Sierra Doctrine?
No, it does not.
Okay.
So
could you, so I guess what I'd like you to do is address the arguments made by in the Duke amicus brief regarding the difference between FERC's discretionary power to invoke Mobile Sierra for non-rate terms and the default rule, which, as I understand it, really applies only to bilateral rate agreements.
Well, there is no holding from the FERC before you that there are provisions in this agreement that allow unilateral changes to the right of first refusal. So FERC, there's no order before you from FERC reaching that conclusion. They specifically say in footnote 7 of their brief that that is not a position that they reached. They based it instead solely on this question of common interests and general applicability, and that's all they based the decision before you on.
Well, let me try again.
Okay.
Has the Supreme Court ever applied Mobile Sierra to provisions other than rates?
They have, and FERC conceded in its brief as well.
Which cases?
I'm sorry.
In your case is whether Mobile Sierra extends beyond rates. The Supreme Court's two most recent Mobile Sierra cases describe the Mobile Sierra doctrine as a doctrine about rates. So the critical question for you is, where has the Supreme Court extended the Mobile Sierra doctrine beyond rates?
And I spoke too soon. I'm not certain that the Supreme Court has specifically addressed that.
Right. It has not.
Think it is not. And FERC, it keeps saying it's a doctrine about rates. So why don't we take it at its word and say it's a doctrine about rates?
Well, FERC in its brief concedes that the Mobile
Sierra... I'm not asking about the agency.
Okay.
I'm asking about the Supreme Court. Why should we not take the Supreme Court at its word as saying that the Mobile Sierra Doctrine concerns rates?
Because under the scheme of regulation in the Federal Power Act, it's never as simple as a rate. There are you can't talk about a rate without talking about associated
terms. So you think the Supreme Court is wrong?
No, I don't think that.
Me why you think we shouldn't take the Supreme Court to mean what it says.
In the NRG and Morgan Stanley cases, they specifically discussed it in terms of rates, but they also discussed it in terms of the contracts in general and the formation of the contracts. And
contracts about rates.
Yes.
Yeah. That's the question. Why the Supreme Court keeps saying this doctrine is about rates. Your case is not about rates. And therefore, one would think the Mobile Sierra Doctrine doesn't apply. You have to tell us why we should conclude that the Supreme Court's description of its own doctrine should not be accepted.
Well, the lower courts have applied the Mobile Sierra Doctrine to non-rate terms and conditions.
That is not a reason why we should not take the Supreme Court seriously.
Well, the fact that the court did not address it beyond rates is because those are the specific issues that were presented to it in NRG and Morgan Stanley. But the idea of stability of contract that it sets out would necessarily apply to...
Completely understand an argument that the Supreme Court should have stated the Mobile Sierra Doctrine differently. But it didn't. And the Constitution calls us an inferior court.
Yes.
We're supposed to be following what they say, whether what they say is right or wrong. You obviously think the doctrine is too narrow. Maybe it is. Maybe you can persuade them of that. But what is it in what they have said, not what the agency has said, not what some other court has said, what is it in what the justices have said that would justify us in taking the doctrine more broadly than as a doctrine about rates.
I would say that would be an unduly limited interpretation of what they're
what
talking about.
What is it in what the justices have said? As I, my colleagues have reminded you, answer the questions we asked, not what you wish we had asked.
Okay. The scheme of regulation under the Federal Power Act is premised on...
Look, I'm asking about what they said.
And I'm sorry that I wasn't clear. I'm quoting what they said. In Morgan Stanley and in Permian Basin, they said the scheme of regulation under the Federal Power Act is premised on contractual agreements voluntarily devised by the regulated companies. That's what they referred to, contractual agreements. And that was the animating purpose,
Mr. Flynn,
of their holdings.
Let me just share a different view with you and get your response to it. I understand the Mobile Sierra Doctrine to be, in essence, a procedural-based doctrine. The notion is that FERC, and for that matter the Supreme Court, can rely on adversarial negotiation about between buyers and sellers about rates to produce something close to a just and reasonable rate in the vast majority of cases. The right of first refusal term in this contract seems to me to be very different. It is frankly reminiscent of Adam Smith's comment from The Wealth of Nations. I think it was, people of the same trade seldom meet together, even for merriment and diversion, but the conversation ends in a conspiracy against the public or in some contrivance to raise prices. Now, this is not quite as blatant, but this sure looks like a horizontal market division.
And I would say that that was not at all what the contemplation was at the time. If you look at the language of that provision, it's in the context of an agreement ceding control over transmission facilities to this central regional entity so that
but they're seeking protection from each other, right? Because the members control MISO, right?
No, that's not. Well, the transmission owners do not. The transmission owners are among many stakeholders that have votes to place members on the board, but they are a distinct minority of those parties that have votes in terms of the members of the MISO board.
Who else is on the MISO board besides incumbent electric companies?
Oh, the MISO board consists of independent entities selected by the members of MISO, and members of MISO, broadly speaking, are the transmission owners, the load parties, and the various industrial consumers, and parties such as that. That all of those together, and often there is some arrangement for input from state commissions without them being formal members. But the members themselves are those that transact in the market, and not merely the transmission owners.
Why? What I understand is, wouldn't consumers be better off if there were competition to build these new facilities rather than a right of first refusal?
I don't know, Your Honor.
Why don't you know?
Because
what benefit do they get from a monopoly?
Well, in this context, again, they get the benefit of a contract that established the Midwest ISO
That's no benefit to current consumers.
It's a tremendous benefit. If you did not have this agreement, Your Honor, the Midwest ISO would not exist in all of its many forms.
What, without the right of first refusal, there would be no MISO?
Well,
you're kidding. Look at MISO, from Canada to, the Gulf of Mexico.
I'm talking about today. Right.
You're not going to tell me, are you, that MISO will collapse if the right of first refusal is abrogated? That would be preposterous.
The Supreme Court said, consider
You are trying to tell us MISO's life depends on the right of first refusal?
No, MISO's life depends upon this contract. And you cannot start
this
unpacking
contract?
The transmission owner's agreement.
What contract?
The transmission owner's agreement, which contains...
To create a right of first refusal? Why can't it be carved out of the contract? Since it's obviously serving no purpose. publicly interested purpose.
It's not that simple.
Why
with
not?
A contract if the Mobile Sierra presumption applies.
What's the sense of what you're saying?
the sense, again, it's a procedural
Let's doctrine. Look at it from the standpoint of the consumers for a moment. Now, if you want to concede, this doesn't help consumers. This hurts consumers. Fine. Then you can argue, nevertheless, you know, it's somehow engraved in law.
And I would suggest that it's not that simple, whether it does.
Why isn't it that simple?
Again, because there are other factors at work, including the sanctity of the contract and the stability.
What is sanctity of the contract about?
How many times has the MISO agreement been modified since 1998? By FERC?
Offhand, not that. I don't recall, but not that often. It hasn't come up very often.
One of the amicus briefs tells us that we're on version 30 to 37 of different portions of the agreement. Is that right?
Offhand, I don't know.
We're not talking about holy scripture here that is unchanging and graven in stone, right?
Well, again, FERC did not reach the issue of whether this agreement could be unilaterally changed. They based their Mobile Sierra decision solely on these two concepts of common interest and general applicability. That's all that they based this on. They assumed away everything else and focused only on that.
What is the everything else? I don't get it. What's this everything else? Give an example of what they should have looked at that they didn't look at.
Well, what I know is what they conceded in their brief in the order below, which frames the
issues. Answer my question. What is it that they didn't look at that they should have looked at? The most What is the most important thing they failed to look at?
They failed to consider the circumstances present in the formation of this contract. This was a multilateral agreement between sophisticated entities negotiating at arm's length.
But a long time ago.
That shouldn't make a difference, Your
really?
Honor.
Really?
It should not.
What if it was the 18th century?
If it was a single contract which formed the foundation of a Midwest market, then it's not something that you should lightly fool with.
Wow. 300 years. Okay, well, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Flynn. Well, I'll give you a minute at the end to rebut. Ms. Perry?
Good morning, Your Honors. Lana Perry for the Commission. I'd like to begin, obviously, with the Commission's finding in Order 1000 that rights of first refusal do, in fact, impair the interests of consumers because they create barriers to entry that discourage...
Am I correct in understanding that under Order 1000 there is still a right of first refusal?
There is
costs
a right...
Costs just have to be allocated in a particular way?
There is a right of first refusal, Your Honor, for projects that don't qualify for the regional cost allocation. That is correct.
Yeah, they have more local cost allocation.
That's right, Your Honor.
Can you explain why the Commission is authorizing any right of first refusal, given the Commission's own rationale?
The rationale, Your Honor, for preserving more local rights of first refusal in large measure came from the interference with states' rights. And what the Commission was trying to avoid doing was intruding on state regulatory territory in this rule. And although perhaps getting rid of rights of first refusal across the board would have been preferable as a general matter, the Commission was making an effort not to intrude on the state's rights and the state's territory.
Given the history of the FERC's litigation against states, that that's a fraught field.
And so it is
and remarkable restraint in some respects.
Well, it is possible to do improvements in the market incrementally, and that's what the Commission was attempting to do in this instance, was to take the first big step and get rid of the federal rights of first refusal without unduly involving itself in matters which are subject to state regulation. If I might address briefly the discussion that just occurred with respect to the Transmission Owners Agreement and the members of MISO, I would like to point out that at the time the Transmission Owners Agreement was entered into, this was in 1998, There was no MISO. The agreement actually was called Agreement of Transmission Facilities Owners to Organize the Midwest Transmission System Operator. It was simply an agreement among transmission owners to get together and contribute their control over their facilities to MISO, but retaining for themselves the right to build and the right to own transmission facilities in MISO. So there wasn't any involvement of MISO or of any other members of MISO at the time that this agreement was negotiated. It was simply an agreement among transmission owners to divvy up the market, so to speak.
This is a little irrelevant, but does the formation of MISO affect PJM at all?
I'm not sure. I mean, there certainly have been seams issues between those two regional transmission organizations because of overlapping.
I wonder if MISO had taken some of PJM's territory.
Well, there certainly have been issues about placement of various members, but, you know, for economic reasons, transmission owners decide to join one or the other, and it's because it is voluntary action on their part. The commission hasn't directed them to join one or the other, and so whatever deal they find most attractive, they go to join that ISO, and it may or may not be contiguous, and it may or may not make sense as a geographical matter, but that's generally how it works.
Ms. Perry, could I ask you to address some points that were made in the petitioner's reply brief? Specifically, there's a suggestion that it looks like FERC is playing bait and switch with respect to arguments that were made to the D.C. Circuit in what became known as the South Carolina case, saying we promise we'll take a look at all these issues in individual compliance actions, and then the individual compliance actions look like a blanket policy. Any response on that?
Not at all, Your Honor. I mean, the commission has made similar findings in some of the compliance proceedings, but I will tell you the underlying contracts in each one of these proceedings are very different, and those have varied the way these determinations are made. Some of them, for example, in the Southwest Power Pool, the agreement that's at issue in that case, it's an agreement among the transmission, the independent system operator, and other members in addition to the transmission owners, which is very different from the agreement that's at issue here. And ultimately, the commission ended up making similar findings, but the actual agreement at issue is very much important in each one of these cases. And so it's not simply, the commission isn't making blanket findings absent consideration of the actual contract that's at issue.
Mm-hmm. And if you had too many individual tailorings, then you'd have cases like the next two that we're going to be hearing. One, the suggestion is that that FERC is backing off too much from its general policy, right?
Right, Your Honor. I mean,
There's also a suggestion in the reply brief that you've got some Chenery problems, that is, under the SEC against Chenery, that you're defending the commission's decision on grounds the commission did not actually use. Did you want to respond to that?
I am not sure what grounds that would be, Your Honor, because the commission clearly made both the finding that this is more akin to a tariff of general applicability than it is to a contract, which is subject to the Mobile Sierra Doctrine, and also made the finding that it was not entered into at arm's length, given the nature of the parties who entered into the agreement. And so I'm not sure what we would have created beyond that.
Well, let's see. We've got speculation. We've got Chenery cited on six pages of the reply brief, which didn't have that many pages to begin with. And we have the commission's speculation regarding the intent of the contracting parties regarding common interest.
Which actually wouldn't be a Chenery problem, Your Honor, because, I mean, that was the commission's finding as to the intent of the parties. It's not a post hoc creation of ours.
Let's see where else we have this. Six. Um, Okay, we've got the 2008 footnote. We've got
Well, in 2008, with regard to the 2008 order, too, Your Honor, I mean, the commission twice in the compliance order and in the rehearing order made the finding that it was unnecessary to decide the question in that case, and therefore we called it dictum, but the commission said it was unnecessary to decide the case, which is the definition of dictum. So that is a commission finding, not a finding, that, not an argument that we newly made in the brief.
When you say, distinguish before between a tariff and a contract, when the commission abrogated the right of first refusal, that's not contractual, is it?
The right of first refusal is contractual. But
I know, but the abrogation of it.
No, Your Honor, that's right. That was an exercise of the commission's just and reasonable authority under the statute to find rates just and reasonable or not.
I mean, do you call that a tariff, or do you use another term for it?
Well, the thing is that the commission's ability to regulate just and reasonable rates would apply to a tariff or a contract. So in that sense, there is no distinction there.
Is a regulatory decision. It's not contractual or a tariff.
Well, it's certainly an application of the commission's just and reasonable obligation under the statute with regard to the rates. I'm happy to address anything further, or if the court has any more questions.
Could you explain for us the legal basis for this so-called general applicability theory for avoiding Mobile Sierra?
Certainly.
The textual basis from the Supreme Court seems mighty thin.
Not at all, Your Honor. If you look at Morgan Stanley at page 531, you'll see that Morgan Stanley began with the statutory analysis, which is under Section 205 of the Federal Power Act, there are two categories. There are rate schedules or tariffs, as it actually says schedules in the statute, but the Supreme Court called them tariffs. Or there are contracts, on the other hand. And they began the Mobile Sierra analysis with pointing out that with regard to the tariffs, Mobile Sierra does not apply. Mobile Sierra only applies with respect to contracts, and that's on page 532. So the entire Mobile Sierra analysis of Morgan Stanley began with the concept that there are two categories of rates, only one of which is subject to the Mobile Sierra doctrine. And that's where the commission got its analysis of the generally applicable tariff versus contract rate. And that is the distinction that was being discussed in the Supreme Court's decision in NRG and also in the subsequent D.C. Circuit decision in New England Power Generators. Ultimately, they didn't have to make the determination whether the auction rates that were at issue there were contract rates or tariff rates, but they certainly spotted the issue. It was certainly under consideration, but they ultimately did not have to reach that issue because they found the commission had discretion to treat them.
Well, this right of first refusal, was this this was created in a contract of some sort, wasn't it?
Yes, Your Honor. It was
contract between whom and whom?
It was between the transmission owners who originally organized the Midwest Independent System Operator.
So they decided on the right of first refusal.
That's right, Your Honor. They were the only parties to that agreement.
This was before MISO, wasn't it?
That's right, Your Honor. This was as part of the process of creating MISO. They entered into this agreement in order to compile their transmission facilities and create the independent system operator.
But the commission approved that?
The commission did approve that, Your Honor. Under a just and reasonable standard, not
well,
a Mobile Sierra
standard.
What was
its theory? Why did it think it a good idea?
Because the commission was encouraging transmission owners to do exactly that at the time, to contribute their facilities into these independent system operators. And so that was something that the commission
was
trying to encourage.
What was the argument for a right of first refusal?
The right of first refusal per se, Your Honor, I don't think came up in the orders originally approving the independent system operator. And, you know, it was obviously that was 1998. It was some many years later before the commission issued Order 1000 and made its findings regarding the anti-competitive nature of the rights of first refusal.
But it approved that original contract, didn't it, that had the right of first
refusal? Yes, it did, Your Honor.
So
yes,
what was the argument for it?
Well, as I say, Your Honor, there wasn't any argument made at the time about the right of first refusal. Nobody alleged that it was unjust and unreasonable or that it was anti-competitive at that time. And so there isn't any findings specific to the right of first refusal in the contract at the time that the commission originally approved
it. But FERC did approve it, didn't it?
Yes, it did, Your Honor.
Okay. Could we go back? After you told me to look at pages 531 and 532 of Morgan Stanley, I've been doing that. I'm not seeing what you're seeing there.
Well, Your Honor, right under Section 1A, statutory background, and it says the FPA requires regulated utilities to file compilations of their rate schedules or tariffs. And then
are synonyms for each other, right? Rate schedules or tariffs, right?
Mm-hmm. And then further on in that paragraph, it says the FPA also permits utilities to set rates with individual electricity purchasers through bilateral contracts. And then it cites again to the provisions of 205. And then at 532, the court goes on to say that the authority of the commission to modify rates set bilaterally by contract rather than unilaterally by tariff is governed by the Mobile Sierra Doctrine. And so they make the distinction there between tariffs and bilateral contracts.
Between rates set by tariff and rates set by contract.
That's right, Your Honor. And then they specify.
I guess I'm not tracking. If you want to say Mobile Sierra doesn't apply beyond rates, I would understand that. But I gather you would have some trouble doing that in light of a lot of FERC precedent.
But what Morgan Stanley certainly says is the authority of the commission to modify rates set bilaterally by contract rather than unilaterally by tariff. And so Morgan Stanley was certainly saying that Mobile Sierra only applies to contract rates and not to tariff rates. And that is the distinction that the commission was relying on.
Well, how are rates are only indirectly involved in the Order 1000, isn't it?
It's matters directly affecting rates, which is what as the D.C. Circuit affirmed the commission's Order 1000, that was the jurisdictional basis for the changes that the commission made during the rulemaking.
Well, I don't understand. If the right of first refusal is abrogated, is the notion this will inevitably affect rates?
The commission did not make a finding that it would inevitably affect rates, but the commission made a finding that it, in its expert judgment, it was likely to make retaining the right of first refusal would result in unjust and unreasonable rates because they would be higher than necessary. Whereas if you had competition, more competition for construction.
I understand. Okay.
I see my time is up. If there's nothing further.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Ms. Perry. Mr. Flynn, we'll give you a little more time.
I'll be brief and just address the question you raised about why is this provision in this contract? And the reason it's in this contract is because these transmission owners made the leap to create this regional entity. So rather than each of them deciding what new transmission should be built, you have a regional entity that takes a broader view and says it's much better if you build this stretch of line rather than each of you building these stretches of lines. And they empowered the entity to do that. But then the question is, it's just a piece of paper unless someone actually builds it. So what this provision does is it goes through each scenario in which, you know, is it connecting to one transmission owner? Is it connecting in between two transmission owners? Is it between a transmission owner and an outside entity? And in each of those circumstances, it prescribes a responsibility to build what the MISO orders to be built. That's why it's there. In 2012, there was no discussion of rights of first refusal at the time. It was to fill a gap that was perceived of how do you implement the transmission construction directives of this new regional entity as part of establishing this highly beneficial new regional entity. And that was the focus of the negotiations. That's why the provision is there. In 2012, FERC held, in response to a complaint, that it is also a right of first refusal that establishes not only the responsibility but also the right. So again, FERC did not make a just and reasonable finding in this case. The only thing it ruled on was that Mobile Sierra was inapplicable because they said this is tariff-like or tariff-ish, despite the fact that it was a multilateral agreement among sophisticated parties who were each independently determining their own interests. Consider, I am a transmission owner, and I want this new beneficial organization, and there are other transmission owners, and none of us are required to make that leap to establish it. And the larger it is, the more beneficial it is for all of us. So that is an adversarial relationship to figure out how far are we each willing to go to give up what we have.
You're saying MISO wouldn't have been created without a right of first refusal?
I would say that MISO would not have been created. It's hard to pick it apart in terms of what the different provisions are because you had an overall agreement in which these parties had to give up rights to set their own, you know, to basically plan the system, to determine, broadly speaking, operating the system, and to provide transmission service on these facilities. They gave all of that to MISO. So it's hard to just pick one of these out and say, well, if you took this out, would it have gone forward or not? It took 2 years. After 2 years, we even had the documents drafted. But we had a ceremony for people to come and sign, and this is evident. This is mentioned in the 98 order. And almost no one showed up because they were afraid to take the leap. The big issue was, when it was filed, the concern was it wasn't big enough and it had gaps. And so FERC encouraged the parties to continue negotiating. That's what it said, continue negotiating.
So is MISO going to break up if the right of first refusal goes down the drain?
Well, I don't know if it is or not. I mean, that's a stretch.
Do you think it might? Do you think the right of first refusal is so important that MISO might collapse without it?
That's a stretch. But the question is, do you honor the commitments, or do you start pulling on the thread and taking out this commitment?
Yeah, well, that's what you're saying, pulling on the thread and the fabric unravels. Well,
at what point do you
stop?
There's
no more MISO.
At what point do you stop?
Tragic.
If you take that attitude, at what point do you stop? Do
you, think that FERC is out to destroy MISO?
No, of course not. I think FERC is
going
to
pull little threads. Yeah. And eventually MISO dies.
No,
that's your fear, right?
FERC has a policy.
That's what you're afraid of.
FERC has a policy.
You're afraid of. That's why you talked about threads, right?
FERC has a policy.
That's what you're afraid of, right? That this is just the beginning. Other threads will be pulled, and eventually MISO dies.
What I'm saying is that demonstrates...
Is that your concern, yes or no? Is that your concern, yes or no?
To the extent that it would be unfair to do that, yes.
Could I just ask one quick factual question about this right of first refusal? I assume we're all familiar with the concept in, for example, sales of real estate.
Right.
But is this right of first refusal at all price sensitive or cost sensitive? Or simply says that if MISO orders new facilities built, then the company with the geographic territory has the first right to build it at whatever cost.
If they can, their only out is if they can demonstrate that they are financially incapable of doing it, and they also have an obligation to exercise due diligence to do it. That's what the contract says.
Okay, so it's not price sensitive the way we usually
Correct.
Think of it.
It's not.
Okay.
It's not.
Thanks.
So they're on the hook. Thank you very
much. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Flynn. We thank Mr. Perry. And we'll move to